Hi, I'm Dave DeWitt, and today I'd like to talk about what the Bible says about the far distant future. The Bible ends with a look at the future. Everyone who takes the Bible at face value understands we're headed for a time when an Antichrist rules the earth and God judges it with 7 years of tribulation. This ends with the second coming of Christ, followed by a thousand-year reign of Christ on earth, followed by a great white throne judgment. But then what? In Revelation 21 and 22, God seems to be giving us the introduction to his new book, the one he'll write in the far distant future. The dynamic contribution Jesus made to prophecy was to add an eternal perspective. Although the Old Testament allows for an eternal hope, its primary perspective of the future is a kingdom on earth which fulfills God's promises to Abraham. The author of Hebrews tells us by faith Abraham was looking for a city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. Like the Old Testament prophets, Jesus taught the same sequence of events listed in Matthew 24 and 25. But Jesus pushed the perspective of believers beyond that of an eternal city, which is not on this earth. What Jesus and the apostles talked about was not just an eternal perspective, but an eternal place, a heavenly city, a new Jerusalem. John 14, 2 and 3, "In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. I go to prepare a place for you, and I'll come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also." Galatians 4, 25 and 26 says, "Our Jerusalem above is free. She's our mother." Hebrews 11, 6, "But as it is, they deserve a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them." And then Hebrews 12, 22-23, "You have come to Mount Zion, to the city of a living God, the heavenly Jerusalem." And one more, Revelation 3, 12, "For who overcomes, I'll make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he'll not go out of it anymore, and I'll write on his name, my God, and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from God." So we're going to look at three different things that we see in the new far distant future: a new earth, a new Jerusalem, and something about the people on that new earth and New Jerusalem. So first of all, here's some things we know about the new earth. Revelation 21:1 says, "I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away." There'll be a new earth, and the new earth will not be a revision or renewal or rebuilding of this earth with more solar panels and windmills and flying machines, but the first heaven and the first earth pass away. Peter said in 2 Peter 3:10, "The heavens will pass away with a roar, the elements will be destroyed with intense heat, and the earth and its works will be burned up." There are some confused teachers saying heaven is a place on earth, title of a 2009 book by Michael Whitmer, although several others also promote this confusion. The idea they have is that the earth is our final dwelling place, so we need to take care of it and protect it and so forth. This teaching is supported by skipping clear statements that this earth will pass away and taking millennial passages about Christ's reign on earth as referring to the eternal state. It seems these teachers think they have a better understanding of the biblical text than the great teachers all through history, say Augustine, Aquinas, Luther, Calvin, Wesley, Edwards, Moody, Lewis Ryrie, Walford, Pentecost, and McGee. I know of no biblical scholar at any other time in history who taught heaven's a place on earth. This earth operates with the laws of thermodynamics, and the second law shows that everything is wearing out, slowing down, and dying. The new earth operates by a completely different laws that allows for an eternal existence. The new earth will be surrounded by a new heaven. In the Bible, the word heaven is used three different ways. One, the atmosphere surrounding the earth. Two, the universe of stars, galaxies, and constellations. And three, the place of the presence of God. Here, it probably refers to the atmosphere surrounding the new earth, although if in the distant future there are things like stars and galaxies, they'd probably surround that new earth too. So the new heaven may be a reference to the new atmosphere or the new stars. The new earth has no sea. The only descriptive comment we're given about the new earth is that there's no longer any sea. Undoubtedly, that means there's no large bodies of water. It could just mean that there's no salt water, but the word sea is not confined to salt water in the Bible. The absence of large bodies of water is a huge difference between this earth and the new one. On this earth, the oceans cover 71% of the earth's surface, and it contains 97% of the earth's water. All the details are not necessary for our discussion here, but suffice it to say that on our planet, on our Earth, the seas are crucial for our existence. Life here depends on huge bodies of water. There is water in the new Earth, at least in the New Jerusalem, John said. Then he showed me a river of water of life, clear as crystal, coming from the throne of God and of the Lamb. But it does not accumulate into large bodies of oceans. The new earth is very large. The New Jerusalem, as translated by the New American Standard Bible, is 1,500 miles. Its length, its width, its height are equal. That's an approximation, of course, but it's not a metaphor. It means it's a cube or a pyramid, something like a mountain, maybe. Its base would be approximately the distance from Detroit to San Antonio to San Francisco to the Canadian border, and then back to Detroit. But a city 1,500 miles high would never fit on this earth. Satellites orbit this earth between 80 and 1,200 miles high. But most satellites orbit at around 200 miles above the earth. That means that the New Jerusalem is 7.5 times higher than where the satellites orbit the earth. Airliners fly at approximately, well, their maximum height is 40,000 feet, which is 8 miles. The New Jerusalem is about 200 times higher than that, so you take a long trip on an airliner, look out the window, and imagine the top of the New Jerusalem being 200 times higher than you are. The new earth is lighted by the New Jerusalem. Revelation 21, 23 to 25. The city has no need of the sun or the moon to shine on it, for the glory of God has illuminated it, and its lamp is the Lamb. The nations will walk by its light in the daytime, for there'll be no night there. John does not say there's no sun or moon, but it doesn't sound like there is, or they aren't significant. The old Earth's orbit around the sun is what gets us warmth and light from the sun. But the sun's light also emits radiation, which is lethal for most planets close enough to a star to be warmed by it, like Mars. Except our Earth has a magnetic field that deflects the radiation, allowing us to be warmed safely. All that is completely different with the new Earth, where it needs are being met by the light supplied by the New Jerusalem. Now, some things we can know about the Holy City. The New Jerusalem, the Holy City, comes down out of heaven from God. John 14:2-3, I go to prepare a place for you. If I go to prepare a place for you, Jesus says, I'll come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. It seems that between his first and second coming to earth, Jesus is preparing a place for his disciples. The point is not that it takes a certain amount of time to do that, but rather that there'll be a place prepared for believers, presumably from all ages, by Jesus in some heavenly realm. We also know that the Holy City, the New Jerusalem, will be the dwelling place of God. In Revelation 21:3, and I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is among them, and he'll dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be among them. John reported, I saw no temple in it, for the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb are its temple. A temple is a place for worshiping God when God's not personally manifested in that place. But in the holy city, sitting in the new city, in the new earth, God's dwelling among his people. So God's pictured as a tabernacle or a temple. We are also told that the holy city, the New Jerusalem, will be a place without suffering. Revelation 21:4 says, you'll wipe away every tear from their eyes. There'll no longer be any death. There'll no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away. In 22:3-5, it says there'll no longer be any curse. And the throne of God and the Lamb will be in it, and his bondservants will serve him. John heard a loud voice from the throne, reminding him that the first things have passed away. We already know that means the first earth, the first heaven passed away. But now John is told it also includes the curse on the first earth. The fall of Adam and Eve was accompanied by death and suffering. We live on an earth which, although magnificently balanced, is also a place of suffering. But in the vision of the apocalypse, John received word that this present suffering would all pass away. Specifically, he's told four things will pass away: death, mourning, crying, and pain. We also learn that the New Jerusalem will be very colorful. We're told the New Earth is very large compared to ours because we know the size of the New Jerusalem, 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles high. But we know more. We know that in Revelation 21:11-14, her brilliance was like a very costly stone, as a stone of crystal clear jasper. And verses 18-21, the material of the wall was jasper, and the city was pure gold like clear glass. The foundation stones of the city, the wall, were adorned with every kind of precious stones, and then he lists all the stones. The 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each one of the gates was a single pearl, and the streets of the city were pure gold like transparent glass. We also learn that the city has a wall around it. It says it's 72 yards or meters. Whether that means the height of the thickness is unknown. If it's the height, it'd be like about a 20-story building. By the way, this is not the first time God created something like that. Speaking about Satan before he fell, Ezekiel tells us God said, you were on the holy mountain of God. You walked amidst the stones of fire. And when Satan sinned, God said, I have destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. It also appears that the phrase stones of fire is a description of the New Jerusalem. The New Jerusalem will also be a place where there's measurable time, Revelation 22:1-2. says, then he showed me a river of water of life, clear as crystal, coming from the throne of God and the Lamb. And in the midst of the street, on either side of the river, was a tree of life bearing 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit every month. So in the New Jerusalem, there's a tree apparently large enough for a river of water of life to flow through it. And it's bearing 12 kinds of fruit. The 12 kinds of fruit are clarified with the information that the tree is yielding its fruit every month. 12 seems to be equated with every month, which would seem to imply 12 months, which would be a year. So there's time in the New Jerusalem measured in months and years. In addition, we learn earlier that time was measured in hours around the throne of God. In chapter 8, verse 1, the Lamb broke the seal. There was silence in heaven for about a half an hour. And we learn that in other kinds of measurements, human measurements were also the same as angelic measurements in Revelation 21:17. So the New Jerusalem is not a place without time. It's just that those living there don't run out of it. There's some things we can know about the people in the New Jerusalem and on the New Earth. There seems to be three groups of people associated with, or at least mentioned, in connection with the New Earth. First, there are the people who live permanently in the Holy City. Revelation 21:3. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is among them, and he'll dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be among them. The first people described in the far distant future are those living in the New Jerusalem, the place where God himself will be among them. But there are also other people for whom he'll wipe away every tear from their eye, and there'll no longer be any death, and there'll no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. Who are these people, and where did they come from? If the comments of Jesus to his disciples in the upper room refer to this city, when he said, I go to prepare a place for you, then we can assume these people are believers, like the apostles, in their eternal resurrected bodies. We also learn about a people called the nations. In Revelation 21:24-26, it says, the nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it in the daytime, for there'll be no night there. Its gates will never be closed, and they'll bring the glory and honor of the nations into it. 22:1-2 talks again about the leaves of the trees were for the healing of the nation. 22:14 says, blessed are those who wash their robes, for they may have the right to the tree of life and may enter into the gates into the city. Now, the word for nations is a very common word, ethnos, which can mean a race, Gentiles, or nations. This is the Greek words the Jews use for Gentiles, and the word Jesus used for those he commanded the apostles to go make disciples of in the Great Commission. So who are these people? Where did they come from? Well, there's a lot we don't know about them, but let's look at a few things we do know. They're true believers in God and Jesus. The end of chapter 21, we're told they are those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. They are those who wash their robes so that they have the right to the tree of life and may enter the gates into the city. They live outside the city, but close enough to walk by its light, an earth big enough to support the New Jerusalem. That's a huge area. At any rate, they live in the light of the city in the outer darkness. They come in and go, and they come and go in the city. When they come in the city, they will bring the glory of the honor of the nations into it. And they might do that at any time because there's no night there and the gates are never closed. There are many believers living outside the city in the area of the light provided by the city who bring some glory into the city and take some healing from the city. The word healing, Walvoord tells us, can be understood as health-giving. So it's not necessarily mean they're sick, but they're receiving ongoing health obtained from the tree in the city. There's a third group of people we learn about, a people called the immoral persons. Revelation 21:27, nothing unclean, no one who is practicing abomination and lying shall ever come into it, only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. 22:15, outside are the dogs and the sorcerers and the immoral persons and the murderers and the idolaters and everyone who loves and practices lying. So there is also this third group of people mentioned who are clearly unbelievers, which seems strange in light of the fact that we're talking about an eternal state with a new Jerusalem located on a new earth. Again, we want to ask, who are these people and where did they come from? It would be easy to say they're just off in the same distance of hell, disconnected from the earth. But why are these people mentioned here? Well, we know unbelievers from this earth are cast to a place that Jesus called a fiery hell. Apostle John told us, if anyone's name is not found written in the book of life, he's thrown into the lake of fire. But there's an additional description of this lake of fire, or dwelling place of unbelievers. Three times Jesus refers to it as the outer darkness, that place where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Peter also saw hell as a place of darkness. Speaking of demons, Peter said God cast them into a hell and committed them to pits of darkness reserved for judgment. Darkness is used elsewhere in Scripture as a judgment of God. There's no way to fill in all the blanks, but we can observe that a huge earth compared to ours, lighted by a holy city, there's a mention of a people who are outside the city without access to it. And if the new earth was spherical, like our old one, but lighted by a holy city rather than the sun, then it would be reasonable to assume that on the opposite side from the city is a place of outer darkness or pits of darkness, which, like a lava flow at night, could also be a lake of fire. We cannot know this for sure, but we do know that, contrasted with those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life, who will bring their glory and honor into the nations into it, no one practices abomination, lying, or shall ever come into it. Well, thank you for listening. A longer paper and more references are available on our website, relationalconcepts.org. That website also has our study book on prophecy if you're interested in a more thorough study of the subject.